My people, welcome to Rants and Randomness. I'm Lovey and I'm your host and Side Eye Sorceress. Shout out to the team at Chicago Recording Company for helping me bring y'all the radio voice, even though we are not in the studio yet. So I've done a few chat and chills where I put on my robe and do a gathering with the dope people of Love Nation on Friday nights. I have guests on who join me and we have conversations that are so good. We talk about self-care, play games, we build skincare routines. We just have great conversations. So this is one of those amazing conversations. On this episode, I bring you my chat with Dr. Yaba Blay. Dr. Yaba Blay, y'all, if you don't know her, you need to know her. You gotta get the full experience of Yaba. I love her. She's brilliant. She's hilarious. She's one of my favorite people. She's a scholar, a professional Black girl, and just overall dope person. So in this conversation, which was so good that I was like, I gotta share with the Rants fam. We're talking about exploiting our privileges for the greater good, sisterhood as a verb, and giving ourselves permission to succeed. So enjoy this chat and chill edition of Rants and Randomness featuring Dr. Yaba Blay. For those who don't know, Dr. Yaba Blay also has an account on Instagram called Professional Black Girl. And you started Professional Black Girl, what, 3 years ago?
I started the Instagram page in 2017, but the project started in 2016.
All right, so talk more about Professional Black Girl.
So Professional Black Girl became a thing.
Yeah.
Started out as a web series and some t-shirts and kind of just grew into this beautiful community. Just wanting to honestly think about the things that make us Black girls. I was teaching at an HBCU. And what I was experiencing was a lot of those students, the women students, were drawn to me, right? And what I noticed just juxtaposing myself is that a lot of my women counterparts were of a different energy, right? And an energy that didn't necessarily affirm the students where they were at. It almost seemed aspirational. So for them, what it meant to be professional was to be something outside of themselves, that they had to train themselves up to that point, that they might have to straighten their hair, that they might have to change their name. So that if you're Keisha Danielle, now you're Kay Danielle. Now you gotta put on your whatever voice. I don't even know what you would call it. I was about to say your white people voice, but I don't even know that that's accurate anymore. It is a particular professional voice that we put on, and you got to dress in particular clothing in certain industries and so on and so on. And so for me, just wanting to flip it and use professional in a way that's subversive to say like, no, professional is the level to which you are committed to yourself.
Yeah.
The level to which you are committed to the things that make you a Black girl. So that baby over there with a whole pack of barrettes in her hair, swinging her head.
Professional. Yes.
Okay, bamboo earrings, name rings, gold teeth, every hairstyle from the 90s. You know what I mean?
The 90s was the most professional freaking decade, okay?
The decade, right? So just to give us a way to honor ourselves, name ourselves just as we are in our authentic selves without apologizing. So it started as a web series in 2016. When that ended, and I didn't have the money to do another season because, again, I didn't plan for it. And I didn't think it was going to be a thing. I started the Instagram page to kind of hold people over. And the Instagram page is kind of just where we've landed in terms of, like, where the most engagement is and where folks connect to the project. So that's where we are right now. I did do a season 2 of the web series last year in New Orleans where I grew up. And so, again, now this year I was hoping to focus on doing more live events. And so we'll see what happens after the Rona goes away.
Yeah. I've worn my Professional Black Girl t-shirt. To
And I thank you for that.
Girl, I wear it in the moments when I'm like, I want people to, when I walk in the room, for them to really understand that, like, I'm coming extra Black. Like, I've worn that t-shirt to speaking engagements where I knew I was going to be, like, one of two people in the room who Black. Like, on some, like, how y'all doing? Yes, I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Professional Black Girl.
You want to say something about it?
And I'm holding down the stage. I'm the one with the mic wearing this t-shirt. So you got to stare at this phrase for the next 60 minutes. You're welcome. Like, it is such a move. And I remember when you first started it, and me being like, yo, this is this is necessary. Like people, that's why it took off, because it was so, everybody saw themselves in it. It was an affirmation of the things that we were told is typically not okay.
Right.
And now it's celebrated by us. I don't care whoever's not celebrating it. We gonna celebrate it.
Right.
I love that project. I love it. And then recently, I was going through your Instagram. So on Instagram, she's FIYAWATA. Yaba's Instagram account recently, I guess because you've had more time too. So Yaba does a weekly series on her Insta stories called Judgment Free Zone, where she curates the funniest, most chill deficient parts of the web and brings it to our forefront so we can just partake in the tomfoolery of us, like the cackles, the humor, and all the glory. And I remember, and Judgment Free Zone has been like 30 slides recently because the Rona, which is a blessing for us, because we've been able to partake in it. And when I tell you, there are times when I'm just like, yo, I end up sharing 8 posts from Judgment Free Zone with somebody. So one day I finally was like, y'all, are you following Yaba? Because if you're not, you're missing out on the good stuff, okay? You're missing out on the goodies. And so many people who follow me weren't following you in the moment.
Right.
They went and followed you and literally came back to me, DM'd me to be like, yo, best Instagram account I followed recently.
Thank you. But let me say also, let me just take this opportunity to thank you publicly, Lovey, because you really have, like, since we connected, since we met, you really have, like, the word I want to say is shepherd, but that's not the word. That sounds like it's for another conversation. But it feels like you really have kind of been like, hey, come here, let me holler at you real quick. What you doing, right? Do this. Go see this. Talk to this person. Do you know this person? What are you doing? And I'm like, okay, yes. That's why every time you send me something, I'm like, put me in the game, coach. I'm ready, you know? And I have to say that because as much as we would like to believe that that is a normal response and engagement in this moment, and I'm sorry, I'm a Gemini rising, so my thoughts do this, but you'll connect them. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed in this moment on social media, does it seem like a lot of people are itching? Like a lot of people want to create, want to put something out, whether it's good or not. It's like they want to seize this moment, you know, and do a lot of things. In that space in general across social media for folks who create content, me, Yaba, I feel, I don't want to say competition, but I feel something in the sense that, like, you know, people see you. Mm-hmm. And it's nobody's responsibility to shout you out or give you credit. But, you know, they see you. And I feel like there's a certain way that people move, you know. For you, it's been really, like, welcoming, opening, supportive, and just, like, I rock with you. Let me put you on. And so I'm just saying that to say, like, I appreciate that, you know, publicly. So even with wearing the professional Black girl shirt or sending folks over to Judgment Free Zone. That's love.
Look, I believe in good people who are doing good things. And I don't see why there should be competition, why we're not bringing each other along, and why we're not making sure that we're on the right path if we have that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's necessary. I feel obligated to do it. If somebody's dope, I'm like, other people should know about this person. It just is, because the more dope people they know about, their lives will get doper for it. So
seems right.
Look, shouting names from rooftops. I enjoy doing it. I think it's dope to have other people know other dope people. It just comes down to that, and you're dope.
Thank you.
Like, it is that simple. And folks are like, oh my God, so glad. And honestly, it makes me happy when people are like, I'm so glad I know this person now, because I've already gotten so much from them that they didn't realize they were giving and sharing with me. Mm. And to your point, social media right now is frustrating to me a little bit, because all of a sudden, Rona happened. Everybody became a content creator in a way that felt desperate, not authentic, not how can I serve other people.
Yeah, it feels like it's a fear though, right? It's fear-based, it's fear-motivated, it's this fear that if I don't do it, then I will no longer be relevant. And just across the board, I feel like I keep telling people, like, we have to give ourselves permission to just be in this moment. Like, there's a global pandemic happening, and they're kind of like a lot of people dying. And like, every time you go outside, if you go outside, people are wearing masks and gloves. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's okay for your body, your being, your psyche, your spirit to feel that. Yeah. So for me, it's challenging because I'm like, this isn't a creative space for me. Mm. I can't create in this space. When it comes, I'll write it, but I can't. So then I think about the children who have to learn in this space and the professors who have to teach in this space and the people who have to continue to work in this space is too much. And so I think a lot of us are motivated by fear of the unknown. We don't know what's on the other side of this. So if I'm a content creator and I put three things out this year already, now we're at this unknown stretch of time. Let me hurry up and put some stuff out so people don't forget who I am. Because when it's over, I got to get back to work. And it's just not serving us. Because now you're getting on everybody's nerves.
Everybody's. I'm even like, yo, this, the Instagram lives, whenever I try to like scroll to get to an actual Insta story and I got to scroll past all the lives, I'm like, why are there 30 lives going on right now? What are y'all actually saying? And what's funny is sometimes I will see like people will recap the live that they were on and I'll see the number and there'll be like 30 people were on it. Meanwhile, you have 600,000 followers, but why were there only 30 people? Because they're tired.
Yeah. What else do you have to give?
What else do you have to give? And I think this moment, you know, there's the memes that were coming up, people being like, you know, there's folks who were like, you have to create something right now. Mm-hmm. And then there were the folks who were like, no. If you got to sleep your way through it, sleep your way through it. And I was like, neither one of them is necessarily
that work for you.
Where is the middle ground here? You can't just sleep your way through a freaking pandemic. That's not healthy. You will wake up when not even know what hits you. And then you also can't bury yourself under work.
Right.
There's a middle ground here you're supposed to actually hit where you are dealing with your shit, but you're also getting some rest.
Yeah.
You seem to have gotten the middle ground, right?
I'm leaning towards that rest side. But again, it's more because like I feel like something has to ground me in this moment for me to like be able to do something.
So you actually did a very smart thing, and I'm so glad you did, which was ask people to drop some tips in the collection jar. Go ahead, drop some love offering in the collection plates, because anybody who does, you added them to a special group, the close friends group, where we get extra judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
So for y'all who are in here who love judgment-free zone, put some money in the love offering jar, okay? It's Venmo, Cash App, all that. What made you finally do that?
Okay, another interesting, again, I didn't plan for it. So what happened was a couple weeks ago, mind you, I started doing judgment-free zone in like 2018.
Yep.
But I wasn't doing it every week. I was doing it when I felt like it. And so then at some point, I started getting more consistent and folks would be asking me like, where is it? You doing it tonight? What's up? And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I started doing it more frequently. But then it started getting on my nerves and people would be like, where? It'd be like 10 o'clock, where is that? And I'm like, it's going to come. Like, do I have a contract with y'all? What's happening here? So a couple weeks ago, I had already, I think I actually posted about it and said, don't be checking for me. When I give it to you, it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes in my inbox like, yo, like we having judgment-free zone tonight. You running late? And I'm like, I'm going to start charging y'all Negroes for this. And she's like, what's your Cash App? And I'm like, oh, where? So I didn't know if she was being funny. So when I put the stories up, I put a slide in there that said, you know, this is labor. This is work. It takes me hour and a half, 2 hours to do it most times. Here's my Cash App. Yo, folks showed up. And so that weekend, that was like the week before April 1st when rent is due, they almost paid my rent. Why not? And I wasn't mad about that at all. I was actually quite thankful, right? So foot in my mouth, but thank God for my smart attitude. So that's what made me do it. But it's even still now, it's not something that like, I don't want it to be transactional. I don't want it to be pay-per-view. It's not something that I'm trying to get paid for in that way. So that's why I wanted to come up with a way that it felt more like still community. You know what I mean? And not transactional, because then I don't want you coming in my inbox talking about I paid $5. Where's my stuff? Like, that's not the vibe. It's not transactional. I'm in that way. So I'm thinking like I'll probably pass it like once a month now. Folks are free to share whenever. they feel moved to.
And can I offer a...
Please do.
I think you should post a slide in your main timeline.
Okay.
That says, if you love Judgment-Free Zone, feel free to drop
on the page.
On the page. Okay. That fits. You know what I mean? That's like, if you've loved, not just like, you're not paying for what you're expecting. You're paying for what you got. If you have loved Judgment-Free Zone, drop a love offering. Here's my Cash App, here's my Venmo. Just let it live there, right? Whoever stumbles upon it at any given time can be like, oh, snap, I didn't even know she, bet, let me go ahead and run that, right? And each time you do a Judgment-Free Zone, drop that slide. Each time. It don't matter if people see it four times. Each time you do an episode.
But see, this is the confession, though. This is the confession. My discomfort, again, is like I don't want the vibe to feel like, A, I don't like begging. And it could be my extreme perception.
Yep.
I'm just releasing it. Mm-hmm. I don't like begging. And I don't like wanting it to feel, again, I don't want it to feel transactional. You know what I mean?
So here's the thing. What you're doing is not necessarily transactional. You're not saying, if you spend $5, I will give y'all more. You're saying, I'm going to do this whether you're giving me or not. However, if you've appreciated the labor that went into it, drop some on it. That's not begging, one, because it's you saying, like, I put in work here. Mm-hmm. I did this work for free, for the love, for the culture. But honestly, your time is worth money. And I think culturally, we also have that blockage in asking for money for our time. And I think people are using to take advantage of us. And I think because we are so service-minded and so giving, we've been told that somehow asking for money makes it seem like we're being greedy, when really it's compensation for your good work. We live in a society that prioritizes frivolous shit, right? And devalues the essentials. And we're seeing that right now above all else. Okay. We're getting a masterclass in how upside down society is. We're all watching The Last Dance and hearing that Scottie Pippen got paid $2 million for the year. And we were all appalled. Okay. We were like, that's all Scottie got was $2 million for that season of the Bulls. This man was throwing a ball in the freaking hoop. And we're appalled that he made $2 million. Meanwhile, if we heard a doctor made $2 million, we'd be like, oh, right. Sheesh, crazy, right? So
right.
One of the things that I'm realizing is I'm hoping that we somehow get permission to make money, to make good money. I feel like we don't get permission to make money.
Who's going to give us that permission, though?
Nobody gives. We have to start giving ourselves the permission. And honestly, it starts with people who are making money being able to say, listen, I'm not making good money just because I'm smarter than you. Because that's not it at all. I'm not smarter than you. Sure. I just asked for more money. I just thought I should get more money. So the wealth and wage gap, a lot of it, of course, is the system that's set up to like wall us into these moments of poverty. And the system is set up for us to think our work is not worth that much. There's that piece. The other pieces, it's worked so well that now we believe it, even in the moments when we shouldn't.
Right.
Even in the moments when there's money there, we'll be like, nah, I can't ask for that. Yes, you can. The only difference between you and that white boy right now is because that white boy had somebody tell him he has to ask for more money.
But this is what I'm saying, Lovey. So, like, where is our Black, connected back to what I said earlier, where is our Black women's network that says, look here, sis, this is how much these people pay me, how much they pay you. This is how much you should be paying. Where is our summit and our conference that says, what industry are you in? Here's what you should be making.
I'm building that, a group for professional women who want to transform to become unstoppable powerhouses, right? Living audaciously and learn that, yes, you're doing well. You can do better. Here's some of the cheat codes. I realized that, like, especially Black women, we don't have the spaces that honestly tell us, how do we do better? What is the actual tangible thing? Oh, I should be asking for more money. Oh, I want to start a side hustle. Where should I start so it can actually make me money? So that's why I launched it, because I was like, this doesn't exist. All the stuff I learned in trial by fire over the years, right? Yeah. There was nobody pulling me to the side being like, this is how much you tell this person you want for your speaking engagement. Nobody did that. I learned because I end up in these rooms, I'll be hearing conversations, or I'd hear somebody be like, yo, this is what you should look for. But it was always accidental. Sure. What happens when we have access to the cheat code all the time? And I'm excited about it because I'm like, yo, this is the group that I needed in my 20s. I realized that my journey is a testimony of the rooms that I'm in, the conversations I've had. It ain't that I'm smarter and got this platform because I happen to be extraordinary and there's glitter. No, it's I ended up in these rooms and surrounded by communities of women who were like, yo, I'm going to push you forward and I'm going to tell you the stuff that nobody else told you. I'm going to tell you, wait, how much they want to pay you for that? Nah, G, ask for this. Me being like, oh, and instantly the moment I asked for that number,
you got it.
And I was like, wait a minute. So had I asked for the lower number, I would have gotten that. But because I just found out this one piece of information, it changed the game for me. But here's the thing. White boys have it.
Come on.
It's the golf club.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, there's enough room for all of us, which is what I'm saying in terms of that energy and that vibe that I've experienced in a lot of creative spaces for Black women, is that there isn't that. And that's why I thanked you. Because you gave me that off top. You know what I mean? You know me like that and be like, no, you should be asking for this. Because they'll play you if you don't. You know, and if you don't have the people to set the standard and let you know even what's possible, the other thing is also being okay with walking away.
That part.
Right? Because then your mind is like, okay, I'm going to ask for 2,500, but they're going to come back with 1,000. 1,000 is better than zero. And you should be paying me 10.
So part of the reason why I found it important to be very transparent about my journey and just like stuff that I find out is me keeping it to myself doesn't do me any favors. Because let's say my fee is $5,000 and your fee is $500 for the same thing. When I walk in the room and I drop my $5,000 and you walk in later and drop the $500, they'll be like, you know what? Let's go with the 500, but we had 10,000. So even if, and the point there is not that they didn't choose me. That's not what matters. But I would want you to at least get paid well, so then they also don't get sticker shock again when they hear my other price.
Right.
If we're all operating from different frames of references, some of us will be here, some of us will be here, and they will never get used to this part.
Right.
We're all just like discount and expect that. So I said, I need people and I need businesses and I need white men and I need white women and powerful people to get used to seeing Black women be unapologetic about being expensive. And it's not even that we're expensive, it's that I'm unapologetic about asking for what I'm worth without any type of discount.
Right.
Without justifying it to you over and over again. So we have to do the work with each other to build that power, like that collective confidence where you can go in a room and say, my fee is 10,000. And just sit there and look at them. And it's up to them to say yes or no. The worst they can say is no. A no won't kill you. So that's why it's been important for that. And I think it's something that we all have to learn. And it's one thing that I really want to use my platform for.
Yeah, it's necessary.
It's necessary. Do you think the doctor in front of your name changes anything about your access into the rooms?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I don't know if Professional Black Girl would be a success if I wasn't Dr. Yaba Blay. Dr. Blay can say it's cool to wear bamboo earrings. Dr. Blay can say that twerking is an art form. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that actually to be critical.
Yeah. The respectability of it all.
Right? So you'll listen to me challenge it. But if it were the average sister, repping for her culture, her Black girl culture, her Black woman culture, would you pay her the same a bit of mine? I don't know. I think Dr. Blay, again, because of whatever people think doctor means, you know, I think people, it does give me more access in some particular ways. But again, because my politics aren't hidden, because people know my energy and my vibe, I think people, special people want to work with me. And I'm thankful for those special people. But not everybody wants to do that.
It's interesting to be in a space where you can see, well, I think it's really important if you're any type of public anything to be as clear about all your privileges as possible.
Absolutely.
All your privileges. My whole thing is I need us to exploit our privileges. I need us to exploit our privileges.
Say more.
Greater good. So I'm clear about my privileges. Like, I was able to rise through the ranks of, like, so let me see my privileges. Being Nigerian is a privilege.
How
now,
so?
All of a sudden. After Black Panther, it really became a privilege that was very loud, right? Because being African, especially West African, now looks like a badge of honor.
You didn't have that experience before?
Kind of, but not as much. Like, it was an interesting shift after Black Panther. Like, one of those, like, instant cultural shifts where all of a sudden, kids who were African now wanted to say, you know what, I'm African, in a way they didn't necessarily want to before. Black Panther did something.
That's interesting, and because I don't know if I'm a whole generation, but I'm older than you.
Yeah.
And the 90s were my heyday. And I will say that it was real fly to be Ghanaian in the 90s when brothers were 5%ers, when brothers was going Rasta, when sisters was getting into head wraps and skirts. I'm like, oh, this came from Ghana. What you mean?
So that was in your college space.
Yes.
Being in elementary school and high school, African in the 90s, not cool.
Really?
Not cool at all. Like, so I came to the U.S. when I was 9. Like, we moved here when I was 9. Had the full accent. My name is Ife Oluwa. That's my first name. Ife is what my family calls me. I walked into my 5th grade classroom on the first day and instantly knew I couldn't be that girl. Like, instantly was like, oh yeah, no, that thing you've been doing, like the voice, the accent, that's not gonna work. The food that you bring in, the jollof rice you bring in, not gonna work. 5th grade me instantly was like, fix that. So I learned to lose my accent by like listening to the other kids talk and being like, all right, I can talk like that. Mm-hmm. And like, they would make fun of me for being African.
Of course.
So it wasn't cool. And so in the 90s, college, it might've been cool.
And maybe it's an age thing, because I definitely got in elementary too. I definitely got in elementary.
Yeah, but even when we finally got to college at that point, I honestly think it was a time thing. But I remember even back then, it still wasn't like, oh, I'm going to understand what your name means. I'm going to be like, nah, do you have a different name you can go by? So it's interesting because I was like, I remember, and of course, because I have the West African Voltron, we also all exchanged notes on like, how was it? Bose is the one who's oldest of all of us. And she was like, oh, no. I constantly got that because she was in Colorado too. So we vividly remember when we wanted to bury who we were. And I remember parents, a few parents even sent me notes after Black Panther came out because we all went, of course, in our regalia because I've been wearing caftans for speaking engagements since 2004.
Nice.
Like, I was like, this is just who I am at this point. I reclaim my Africanness in college, but people being like, yo, my kid is finally like, I actually do want to go by my African name after Black Panther happened. So Nigerian became a very prominent privilege at that point for sure. But even before then, a bunch of my privileges, I'm skinny. Like, I don't look intimidating at all, or nobody can take my presence as a threat. And also there's something about, I'm also kind of accentless.
What's your name?
A lot of people can't detect where I'm from until I get excited.
Yeah.
So my voice and my accent is also kind of more palatable in the way that feels very like mainstream. Like, I don't sound like I come from the hood. I don't sound like I necessarily...
only have white friends.
So it's one of those middle ground. So my privilege is I can walk in a room and be ignored, but not really. I also won't ruffle feathers if I choose not to. Some people's very physical presence, people take it as.
Sure.
And I realized that, and I was like, okay. So when my career started going higher and higher and I started getting all these opportunities, I felt convicted because I'm like, if I'm in the room and I'm the only one who looks like this, that's not a point of pride. Like, I should not be like, man, so I finally made it. My job when I'm in the room is to exploit what I came in with, to bring more people into it.
Okay.
So my voice when the white people are listening to me is not to make them feel better about themselves. It's to make sure that that privilege that I have where I have their ear, that they can listen to somebody who they don't necessarily find as palatable as me. That's what I mean by exploiting our privilege.
Okay.
As we get more power and walk into these rooms that feel kind of locked out of everybody else.
Right.
How do we use the power that we walked in? How do we spread that to somebody who looks like us more?
Right. So then in that space, if you have access to this room and you have a white ear, right? And I'm thinking of myself, I said, you know, the whole professional black girl may not have worked if I wasn't Dr. Blay. Like I have been invited to academic institutions to present on professional black girl. You know what I mean? So now we're in this space and not in a way that's like, come and look at the natives, but like, this is who I am. This is not them. This is me. Look at me, me. Yes, I have a PhD. And yes, that's me bending down low. See the picture?
See? Come on.
Same person.
Same right? person.
But you can't make assumptions about any of us based upon any fallacy that you've learned about black people from a distance.
Yep. And that's why I'm like, also, it's no fun if the homies can't have none, not a train. But you know what I mean? Like when you're in the room, you're like, I don't even want to be the only one in here. So I'm walk into it very conscious of like, my job is to make sure that something in here shifts that allows this room to not be this next time I see it. So I understand that a lot of white folks listen to me. A lot of white folks follow me. So I'm like, okay. And I've been getting these weird opportunities where I'm like speaking internally at a Fortune 20 company to their executives.
About
so
what?
I'm always critical of like, what am I doing when I show up in the room?
Look, what they want you to talk about.
Oh, girl. Usually it's about like my story, about, you know, they'll, you know, ask me the question of like, what should we do? Because some of our employees aren't feeling. And I typically point, like look directly at them and I'm like, you know why you're having these troubles? It's because you guys probably have racist policies. Yeah. And I'll be like, there are times when I'll be like, you probably also have the boss who has made it really hard for them to be challenged, or when they see their black coworker challenge them, they take offense to it. That's why you're failing right now publicly. That's why this PR issue happened. That's why that campaign dropped that did not go well, because the black folks and the brown people in the room didn't feel like they could speak up in the room because you created this environment of toxic whatever.
So this is my thing with the whole, with the diversity work that I do, right? Mm-hmm. For a minute, I was like, I'm not putting D&I on anything. I don't look at me as that. I don't do that. Because what I was finding is that these white corporations ultimately wait till a tragedy happens. Then they want to Olivia Pope you for you to come in and fix it. Now, you spent 13 years creating the problem. You want me to fix it right now, right now. And I can't do that, right? You want a checklist on how not to be called racist. That's not how this works. Instead, you can invest the time on understanding culturally the culture of your corporation as well as the culture of your problems. And that takes time.
Yeah, so let me say something that might not seem popular. When they want you to come in,
just go.
Their 13-year problem, take their money. Be very clear and say, listen,
Lovey, I feel like I need an exorcism or something. And I don't even want to be exercised, because in that moment when you say take their money, I'm like, sis, I want to take their money, but I also want to check them.
You can do both. Oh, no, no. I'm very clear when I say, listen, my recommendation is we do deep work, figure out why you had this problem, figure out the environment of your company, figure out what caused this thing, this major gaffe to happen. because it's deeper than this campaign. This campaign happened to show up as a symptom of y'all's fucked up internal policies and atmosphere, all that stuff.
Sure.
I recommend we do a 1-year comprehensive deep dive where I give recommendations on what I think you should fix. And a lot of times I'll say, oh, well, we just want you to come in for a keynote. Okay, so you want me to come in for a keynote, talk to your whole staff, and that, great. I'm going to charge you a lot of money for the shit. But the thing is, if they're not paying you, they'll pay somebody else to do that same exact service, and it won't be good. So I did a talk at a major company. Mm. They had me coming for a full day. I talked to their executive staff. I talked to their... It was one of those, like, I need y'all to get your shit together. Like, I basically spent 8 hours telling them, this is why you don't have your shit together. I did not miss words. I literally was just like, listen, I've heard stories internally of what's happening here. It's not okay. This is why you're supposed to be a global leader and blah, 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 blah. This is why it did not work. This is why it's not working right now. This is why people are jumping shit. Until you fix this, you're going to have the same problem. So I walk away, did my part, 8 hours. You know what? Run me my money. Mm. I'm out. So I, 3 days later, the HR person sends me an email and said one of their new hires, she was only hired for 3 months at that point. She was not an executive. She was maybe an account manager or something, sent an all company email to talk about something that happened to her in the office, or like somebody said something to her, something that was like mad, disrespectful, and prejudiced and racist. Mm. Sent to the whole company and said, this is not okay. After she heard me speak.
I heard that.
This HR person said, that has never happened before in this company. Nobody has ever had the audacity to do that. And because she rang the alarm, they have to like address it. So when you go in the company and when you take their money, it's not that you're taking your money and just running. You're giving them value.
Sure.
In that room, I always look for the one person who starts nodding her head vigorously, like, as I'm talking. And I'm like, oh, I'm talking for you right now.
Yeah.
My words are actually for you right now, because when I walk out this room, you have now currency to be able to say, here's how I've been feeling, and here's how it got affirmed on that stage. And I don't even talk to Lovey.
Right.
So think about it less as I need to solve their problem. You can't solve their problem, because unless you can solve human beings being trash, you can't solve their problem.
You're right.
Take their money, but give them the value, because when you walk in the room, what happens when you walk out is a ripple effect. Your very presence, the things that you said, somebody in that room took it to heart. It might even be the person who was doing it. It might be the shitty boss, because I just talked directly to you about the work that you've been doing that's been terrible. You are making impact. Don't think that your job is to solve them. Your job is to speak for somebody, one person in that room, and speak to one person in that room. If you are the person who sits in meetings, who cuts off the intern all the time, I need you to stop that, because if you want your productive team to do impactful work that will get positive response, you cannot create the environment where that happens. And somebody in that room heard it and was like, shit, I think I do that. I've had people come up to me after speaking engagements and say, you just made me think through some things I've been doing. I didn't realize I was doing it.
For sure.
So your job ain't to fix nothing. Your job is to talk to and for somebody.
And just to get them to think differently.
Think different. Just flip that thought real quick. And then you walk out. And then what happens is in the room, somebody else tells somebody else about it. Because somebody like you is necessary in these rooms. You are absolutely necessary. How you will basically call them to task is needed. So, and me knowing that in the whole speaking circuit, for example, which is something that you would kill. These white folks, when you find out how much they get paid for the most dull speeches, for the most dull, most uninspiring speeches, you will be appalled. So I'm like, you know what? Why wouldn't I? At least I walk in and give you value and walk and challenge you and let you see something different. Think about our networks. I think we think about networks different.
Okay.
I have many privileges, and I am not shy about talking about it, because I'm like, and it's not to brag, it's to say, I recognize it. I mm-hmm. see how fortunate I am for it. And I realize that a lot of people don't have it. So what do I do with mine? I have to share what I'm learning. I'm part of a group of powerful women in business and technology and media that this white woman started. It's probably about 200 people in the group. It's changed the way I think about network. It's changed the way I think about professional community. This group exists as a Google group. And any day, any given day, people will come in there, hey, I'm looking for a nanny. Does anybody know somebody in New York who has a nanny? And they're like, eight people who have never talked to her before, one-on-one. We'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah, here's my nanny's information. Here's this person's information. I'll come in. When they change my, when I, the first time I asked them for something was me asking for information about a conference that wanted me to come speak that didn't want to pay me and said they don't pay speakers. So I go in there. I was like, let me ask the women of the list. I was like, y'all. So I just got asked to do this conference in Europe. They said they don't pay speakers. Is this true? Within 15 minutes, I had 20 responses. Women being like, oh, no, no, no. I spoke last year. They bought my ticket. Like, these are white women who a bunch of them I'd never even spoken to one-on-one.
Sure.
And in that group, they share information so freely about things. They can be like, hey, does anybody know big star over here who can connect me because I have a project? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, hit me offline. And just being in the group and watching these women share freely. And it wasn't like everybody's not best friends.
Sure.
Everybody ain't, you don't have most people's phone numbers, but seeing how open they were and seeing how much it transformed the way they can do business also changed and gave me a different idea of, wow.
We ain't looking to make friends.
It's not about the friends of it all. It's understanding and having a really logical, not even a rah-rah, everybody's the same. Having a really logical understanding that our access and our power is actually tied. Our access and power is tied because if you can't get in the room and I'm in the room, what if I get kicked out the room? I can get kicked out the room very quick. Who gets me back in it? So I shouldn't find comfort because you're not there. I shouldn't find comfort because I'm the only one there. I shouldn't find comfort that I'm the only one who has this information. And this group understands it. So even right now with the PPP loan thing, everybody in the group is currently sharing information. Like, did you get your PPP loan? No, I didn't. Well, I got it. I got mine 2 days after I sent mine. So we're also now being able to, knowing that I can go to them for information, knowing that these women will give me the answer, even if I don't know their phone number.
Sure.
I'm like, damn, what happens is if we kind of operate like this?
This is what I'm saying to you, my sister.
Yeah.
This is also a cultural thing that's, they've created a culture, right, around being comfortable talking about money with other women with whom they do not see as their opposition. We have to create a culture for us. Yes. Right? We say
sis,
but we gotta live sis. We gotta live sis. We say sis.
You say we're my sister. We gotta live sis differently. Nobody. That's why that is why I'm like, I want to live sis. I want my life to be the verb of sis.
This is what I'm saying to you.
That every day I want to live that. And every day I hope I am. We have to normalize these things. The actual verb. Sisterhood is a verb. Love is a verb. Friendship is a verb. So what does that verb mean? How do you put that into action? It means I have to tell you information that I know. Right? Like it means...
We also have... it's so for me, what's interesting is a starting point, right? And maybe not a starting point and these things happen simultaneously, but it's like the work that we have to do to stop seeing each other as competition, to stop seeing the magical Negro as the goal, to understanding, as you say, it doesn't benefit you to be the only person in the room. Like, we have to reteach that. We don't want to be exceptional Negroes. We don't want... it's lonely in here by myself.
Lonely. It's lonely as shit. It is lonely as hell to be exceptional. So, to the point of the... damn, I just forgot my point, but it was related to what you were just saying about... no. What was I about to say? Damn.
About undoing the competition piece, being in the room by myself.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. People got to realize. People take... anybody who happens to be, who looks like them as competition. And that's a problem. Because the way I look at everything is I don't have competition. I don't have competition because I don't care if we are running the same race. I don't have competition because I can only go as far as I can run. While I'm worried about this person running fast, bitch, can you run fast? You figure how fast you running. Stop worrying about her ass. Because it don't matter if you run a 9-second race. If she ran an 8, she gonna win. It does not matter. What is your own limit? Work on your own shit. I don't have competition. Because I'm like, even if somebody, I have friends who are in my industry who are also speakers who can speak about the exact same thing I can speak about. And I will recommend them for something just as much as I recommend myself. Because at the end of the day, they'll pick who they want. You can't get, there's no other Lovey. I remember one time, there is no other Lovey because, not because I'm like only the person doing the work that I do. No, I'm the only person who does it and says it the way I say it. And that can't be replicated. People can try, people have tried.
I'm sure.
I remember once I actually asked, somebody came and asked me if I could write something for them. And I was like, I don't have time, or either way I declined. And they said, well, who's another Lovey that you can point me to? And I literally was like, I actually don't know anybody, but I know somebody else who does it different, but they're still good. You don't need another Lovey. You just need somebody else who can do this well. People got to stop worrying about who's competition or not. And you don't have competition because honestly, you're your own best and worst competition, because if you already took yourself out of the game, why got to worry about you?
True that.
Like, no competition. So it's just, we are so worried about it, which is why I'm like, I can tell somebody that somebody else exists who does the same thing I do. If they still want me, they'll come for me. If they want both of us, they'll pick both of us.
Understand that where you are with that, Lovey, that's a journey, that's a path. Mm. Go on and write the map out, sis. Mm. That's a journey. That's not an easy space to get to feel like you don't have competition when we live in such an energetically competitive world. You know what I'm saying? Particularly, and for me, I think what's most heavy is the idea that, like, in order to do work about Black women and girls, I got to compete with other Black women. I don't want to. Y'all got that. I'm going to do it how I do it.
That's the trick. You're not competing with other Black women. Because if somebody was to, there's a professional Black girl version that exists somewhere, right? It's not called professional Black girl. There's some platform somewhere that wants to amplify Black women and all their authenticity, but it's not professional Black girl.
No.
So you really are not competing with them. It's like,
I guess when I say competing, right? We're here. We put it on the table. We have this notion that the mainstream, that corporate, that particular funders who don't look like us, right? Have their checklists and say, this year we have to put funds towards doing something for the Blacks. And this year the Blacks Fund says they want to do something for this, they want to do something for this, they want to do something for Black women. Mm-hmm. Now when we go to look for the person who's doing stuff on Black women, here are some options. Maybe competition isn't the word, but there's a pool. And within that pool then, how are we functioning in the ways that you said, where it's like, if I can't do it, she can do it, she can do it, she can do it. You know what I mean? Like, are we a community in that? Or are we racing to be seen as the magical Negro, as the magical brand that reps for, you see what I'm saying?
So that is why funding and where we go to look for our money and our wealth building should not be based on a funding source, one funding source, right? Because then that's what creates competition. When you're told, you know what, I can only have one of you.
Right.
So you're like, I gotta be the best one. That's what fuels the competition, which is why I don't play that game. I actually don't play that game at all. I don't go to, so most of the money that I make does not come from like funders.
Sure.
Brand ambassadorships, because I'm expensive. You could get another influencer. Y'all not gonna want to pay for me if you can get this other person. But a lot of times I'll walk away and say, y'all don't have the budget for me. And they'll come back and say,
back with the budget.
Budget. Mm-hmm. Because we wanted you and only you. We came for mm-hmm. you and you're the one that we want.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop playing that game with them because they pit us against each other.
Yes.
And that's how we become the mortal enemies. Like, ah, she got that thing and I didn't get it. So I opt out. I always tell people, if you are basing your decision on me competing for something, against somebody else, I'm going to tap out because it's not for me. If you want me, you come directly to me and me only. I'm not in a game of play this. I can, you know, apply for an award here and there, but I'm not going through the whole, oh man, it's either I get this money for this thing or my girl gets this money. I'm tapping out because I don't even like the optics of it.
Yeah, I don't apply for anything. You know what I mean? And I'm blessed. If we talk about privileges and what I'm thankful for, I'm absolutely blessed by all of the communities that I've ever created because my folks have taken care of me. You know, they've taken care of me, and I can't not say that enough. It's when those conversations, because you know another thing that happens, right? When folks love your work, I'm sure you've experienced this. They're like, oh, girl, you need to apply for this. You just need to do this. You need to talk to so-and-so. Do you know so-and-so? All you got to do is this. And people create all these things, right? And there have been many times where I feel like I'm not taking full advantage of all the opportunities because of my bad attitude. But this notion of like, again, I'm healing, right? This notion of me having to translate this very authentic, real experience in language and words and platform to appeal your understanding, that there, I have issue with, right? It's like, and again, I'm gonna have to work through that, I know, but like the idea, I don't make my work for you ultimately. I make it for us, you know? And the fact that us has, you know, funded this work in a lot of ways is testimony to that. But I also know that that can only go so far. So it feels like I'm at a crossroads, right? Of like wanting to stay committed to the authenticity of our experiences, but also wanting, like, we deserve to see us on larger platforms. We deserve to have this experience in a much bigger reach, right? So like, in a lot of ways, I know I have to get over myself, you know, and figure out a way to do that and remain authentic. But that transition, that's where I feel like that's the world of competition out there. Like, who are those people to tell me this is how much I'm making, this is who you need to connect with, this is who can put you on? Matter of fact, I'm gonna put you on. I've not felt a lot of that energy. There have been lots of sisters who've loved on me, loved the work, tried their best, opened the door, appreciative. I know them by name. I live off of the love of the followers.
Yeah.
You know?
And I guess that's why I'm like, it's game changing to be a part of a community that is radically transparent. The one thing that I learn when I am in rooms of white people is how they move unburdened and how it transforms and creates this domino effect around. I watch it and I'm like, okay. So this group that I'm a part of, I'm like, huh, that radical transparency is powerful beyond measure. It's so powerful because I know that anybody who I need to reach in this world, I'm one ask away from. And that power, that's how they've been moving since they were two. So I'm just like, how do I, in a world where the system is not set up for us, how do we set up the system for ourselves to win? That's where I'm at. I'm like, you know what? Even in this whole Rona thing, as we've seen that the system is not paying us, it's not giving the people the help that they need, I've been like, okay, so what can we as individuals do to help the people who look like us, who we love, right? So like today, I'm like, if you have a barber or a hairstylist, nail tech, who you typically be going to, pay them.
Sure. Tip them.
So we live in a world where the system is set up against us, which means our role is now to fill a lot of gaps. I want us to ask ourselves constantly, where we are being failed, where can we rise up? We're being failed because Black women, we've never been told to negotiate. We've never been told we should do this thing. We've never been given permission to audition.
Old taught.
So those of us who have these platforms, who have these mics, who were given permission along the way by somebody and took it on and was like, got it. Who else can we give permission to? Who can we give this information to? Who can we make sure does not have to go through the weeds that we had to?
Right.
So that's where I'm at when I say, exploiting my privilege. I have to exploit my privilege every day and be like, if there's anything I can do, if there's any one person who can see the platform and be able to be like, I learned something today. Okay, great. Or at least something that's going to make me better. Something that I can use when I walk out the room. Negotiating, being able to walk in the room and say, actually, I don't want that. Being able to walk away when it doesn't serve you. So that's core. We got to do it. We got to do it. Because otherwise, we're going to continue being in the wheel. We might keep blaming the system because the system is trash.
Right.
That's a given. Right. Okay.
It's also kind of, you know, we should blame the system, but we also have to understand our participation in the system as well, and our reliance upon the system and our addiction to the system, because we really don't want to be free if we can't imagine our freedom outside of the way the system is already set up.
Yep. Which is why we can't depend fully on the system to build our money and our wealth and our financial well-being, which is why those of if you, anybody who you support, who is a Black creative, Black business owner, just Black person who's doing something amazing, send them the tip jar. It's not begging. It's not, oh, I'm just, because this person elsewhere is not getting paid for their work in a way they should be.
No, especially not now.
So even if you have $20, that $20 makes a world of difference, because if 5 people send $20, that's 100. If 100 people send it, how much is that? 2,000?
Mm-hmm.
We have to kind of take it on. We are, sister's keeper has to become a verb. So post that thing unabashedly. If you love my labor, bitch, tip that shit. Okay? Tip. And we got to keep sharing this stuff. We have to. So it's just because we can't afford not to.
That's what's up. We appreciate you for that, Sister Lovey.
I'm always cheering for you. And listen, again, you know I be sliding into your DM. I'm like, yeah, but what you up to? You have access to me, okay? Like, you know.
I do. I be trying to chill, but I know.
No,
I do.
Don't chill. Damn it. Don't chill. What you need, because I might not have it, but I might know somebody who does. And even if I don't know, at least they'll put it out there. And who knows, it might come across my desk. You know, like, I don't want us to be afraid of just the ask.
Yeah.
You have the access, the network that you have. There are people who are waiting, who just want to know what you need.
Right. I got to figure out what I need. I got to figure out what I want this to be, what's sustainable, you know, and what's best for us, because we deserve to grow also. I don't like platforms that stay stagnant, you know. So a professional Black girl has been what it is for 4 years almost. What's next for us, you know, even for me, you know, not wanting to be overly branded, if that makes sense, right? So it's me, professional Black girl is one thing that I do. I do a lot of things, you know, and so also wanting to be clear about who it is I want to be when I grow up as well, you know. So I hope to get over this kind of numbness that I'm in now and get into a working creative space before Rona gives us free. And be a little bit clear about what it's going to look like on the other side. But I'm excited. I still haven't given up on 2020. Like, I talk mad shit about 2019, but I feel like, see, this is the lesson. Some of us are hard-headed. We're going to learn the lesson like this. And when we come up out of it, it's going to be beautiful.
Yep. And I think now, look, I'm taking this time to be like, how can I be better? Okay. Because, you know, everybody got to get their shit together. I'm absolutely trying to make sure I'm getting my shit together right now. So okay. I'm learning. I'm also taking like 3 classes myself right now. The science of well-being. I'm taking an accelerator. I'm taking a, oh yeah. Like, I'm forever learning more.
So you get up and get dressed in the morning.
I don't. I still be in pajamas. Don't get it twisted. I still be in pajamas and some sweats. I'm not putting on clothes in real life. Unless I have something to do, like a video call. I had a video call yesterday that was like actually important. So I just put on a bra and shit, but I still had on sweatpants under that, okay?
Right.
So I'm still waking up and, you know, lollygagging for the first hour and dragging my feet. But in between, I'm trying to stay on top of things and trying to get some work done. And so, you know, we out here everybody trying to figure it out too. I've definitely not stopped learning. I'm not, no matter where people think I am in my career, I still think there's so much more for me to learn personally and professionally.
Sure.
So I'm taking this time to be like, you know what? take
learn forever.
Make sure you're spiritually okay. And yeah, that part. Okay.
That part.
So yeah, I'm working on it. But this was a gift. You joining me on Chat and Chill.
This is dope. Thank you.
It's dope. Yo, thanks to Dr. Yaba Blake for joining me on Rant and Randomness. If you're not following her already, you need to. She'll make your Instagram life so much better. She has two accounts. One is Fiawata, Fiawata, and she also has Professional Black Girl. And don't miss the extra edition of Judgment Free Zone that she does. It's so dope. You get access to when you drop money in the collection plate. So that information is in her profile at Fiawata. So follow that. And if you didn't catch it during our interview, I mentioned a group for professional women that I'm building. Well, it's almost here. We're launching it soon, and you don't want to miss being a part of the first group that gets in the doors. Turn on your Instagram notifications, because even if you're following me at Lovey on Instagram, you're going to want to know right when this thing opens in the next couple of weeks. And if you haven't already, you need to join Love Nation. It's my online community where you get all the highly exclusives and the behind the scenes info first. It's an amazing place. It's a safe space in the dumpster fire world. So go to lovenation.com, get yourself signed up. It's in the App Store and the Google Play Store. That's LUVVNATION. Such a dope community to be a part of. Much love to Chicago Recording Company. I currently don't record this podcast because, yeah, still quarantining, but they're a huge help putting my recordings from home together and making it sound on point. Subscribe to Rants and Randomness. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get it. And if you want to follow the podcast on social media, we're at Rants and Randomness on Twitter, at Rants and Randomness on Instagram. And as always, follow me on social media. I am at Lovey everywhere. See y'all in the next episode.